Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special episode of Film Sack. Yeah, that's right, a 30 or 35-minute or so look at parts of film that we don't normally talk about on the show. We got some people out of town, so we're doing this special episode for you in lieu of the normal. But don't worry, we'll be back with a film next week. I'm Scott Johnson here with Brian, and Randy. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Welcome back.
Are we back already?
I know. Weird.
Wow.
Yeah. It's almost like we just recorded a whole other episode and then just did this.
I was going to say, It feels like just minutes ago we were talking about Underworld.
Yeah, weird. Weird.
Underworld, which is 31% on Rotten Tomatoes. If you love that movie,
yeah.
You might have a guilty pleasure on your hands.
You might.
Perfect.
It's a 7. I know it's a 7 out of 10 on IMDb, which is a little more. But that's more indicative of, that's like user reviews and stuff, right? Like that's not like critics. Critics are.
Yeah. Who likes the user reviews?
I like critics. I like critical reviews, but I also like people reviews. And then I really like film sack takes. That's what I like the most.
Okay.
All right. Today we're going to do a whole discussion around guilty pleasure films. Films that we see, even though we may even know they're terrible, like straight up bad. You could never defend it in court. Like, this is a bad movie, but I watch it because it means something to me. It meant something to me as a kid or even now or whatever it may be. But also,
go ahead. Do you have to truly feel guilty?
I'll give you a lighter definition of the guilt, right?
Okay, go.
So obviously you're watching something that more than half of people don't like. That's the whole point of this topic, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like,
you're not prideful of it that you watched it. Right. It's like, oh, guess what I watched? Nobody wants to hear it.
The guilt comes in is that since more than half of people that you might approach don't like the thing, you can't just say, hey, come watch this movie I like with me, because it's likely that the person you're talking to is not going to like it. So, and you know that. You know they're not going to like it because more than half of people don't like
these
movies.
But let's take an example like this one. I really like Con Air, and most of the people I know like Con Air. But I don't think any of us are claiming Con Air is amazing or deserves Oscars or anything like that. It's just Con Air is a great escape and a dumb time. And so I feel like there's also that definition where more than 50% of people can like it, but we all are in on the joke. We all know that it's kind of stupid.
Acknowledging that it's bad.
I don't think Con Air drives enough guilt then. I'm gonna say you rule it out. Like, it's 58% on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way.
Yeah.
The first movie I looked up was Major League, because I've seen it 100 times, and it's 83% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, I guess that's not, there's no guilt there.
Just a legitimately fine film.
But that's the thing. I mean, should you feel guilty for just liking a thing you like, even if majority of your friends and majority of the people you know don't like it?
This is where I was going to go with it, because I'm like, you guys do know what my favorite movies are, right? They're all crap. I love crap movies, and I don't have any guilt.
Yeah, you love Minority Report. You're a huge fan. And
no guilt whatsoever for watching crap. I'll watch it, and you can't make me feel guilty. I love that I like crappy movies.
Well, let's get an example out there to bounce around. What's a movie?
All right, so I'll say a movie that when I say it, people go, oh, no, thank you. I don't want to watch that shit. One thing that we've talked about recently, but I've found that more people like it than I thought, and that's Prometheus. I love that. That's a guilty pleasure for me, because I don't usually like to bring it up in conversation, because I usually get feedback. It's like, I hate that movie.
Yeah, so I'm with you 1,000% on that. I don't understand the hate. I actually really like it, but I also know that it's not what people thought they were supposed to get, and I think that's the big hang-up with that movie.
And it's at 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I would say it's just a good movie.
I think it's a good movie, and maybe I just misread it. Now, I will tell you, this is the real guilty pleasure that you may not know about me, and most people have dislike for it. Return to Oz, the 1985 film with Vicki Vallencourt, Firouza Balk, where Dorothy returns to Oz after she returns at the end of Wizard of Oz, and she's had some mental problems, so Aunt Em ships her off, and she's gonna have some electrical shock, and so she escapes, and she escapes back to Oz, and things are in disarray. And I love that movie for just how all the deep subjects it approaches, because it was supposed to be, it's supposed to be a kid's movie. You expect to be a kid's movie, but it deals with a lot of serious things that kids can understand.
Yeah.
But so I find that movie exceptionally enjoyable, but I find that I usually can't talk to anybody about it because it's not like Labyrinth where people can go, I love the Labyrinth.
Can I share a couple of casting notes about this film? I've never seen it, and I think you're on the right track in terms of what the definition of these movies are. But this movie, as you mentioned, Firouza Balk, or however you say her name, Piper Laurie's in it. She plays Auntie M. But my big surprise fun here is Tim Rose. He's Admiral Akbar in the story.
Yeah, Akbar is in here, and he's playing TikTok, which is an amazing. I love the character designs in this movie. Yeah. TikTok is this kind of more somber character, and he's wound up.
He's a robot, right? He's a robot.
Yeah, he's a wind up. Everything's wind up and steampunk in this, because it is based on the book, the follow up book, Frank Baum's follow up book of Return to Oz, and it's more faithful to the books. I've read the books. I feel like this is the tone that I felt more like in the books, and I really like it. And it's kind of the opposite of the more positive original Wizard of Oz. It's kind of like the opposite of that. So, there's a lot of things about this movie that I like to talk about, but people usually shut me down and go, no, this is weird. I don't like it.
And just while we're, I'm just going to do this throughout this episode. Return to Oz is 56% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
I think that is in the range where you can make the case for, individuals are going to feel guilty, but it's not a, bona fide, objectively guilty ridden movie. And my example for me of that is Star Trek Insurrection, which is at 55% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I don't call it a guilty pleasure just because I can make a case for it, and I can sit somebody down and say, I need you to watch this with this in mind, and it's really, I enjoy it, and they'll enjoy it too. Star Trek Insurrection isn't bad, despite what you've heard.
No, it's a good, what it is. It's a really good 2-hour TNG episode, but it just didn't feel like a movie to a lot of people. And I think that threw people off, but it also had wrinkly, stretchy face F. Murray Abraham in it.
That's right. Yes.
Nothing wrong with him. F. Murray Abraham. He's so good. That's a good call, Randy, because that movie is, I think of that movie as a good episode of Star Trek, but it felt funny to see it in a theater.
Yeah.
You probably love it for, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. You love it for that reason. Why is that an infinitely returnable Star Trek experience for you?
It moves me. And I feel like this is what Brian Dunaway was just headed toward. The feeling, I don't feel guilt. I feel moved. I feel entertained. Mm. I feel in some of these, they inspire me. Or they give me a warm feeling that there, I can't have any guilt, like real actual guilt. Like, I don't even know. We should probably have talked before the show about coming up with a better word for the sensation of, I can't share this with anybody because they aren't going to like it the way I do. But it's, like Star Trek Insurrection, like, again, at 55% on Rotten Tomatoes, there's just enough people out there who are going to get it and enjoy it that it's not even really a guilty pleasure at all,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind seeing it again just to kind of remind myself about
what I took a I took a dive as I was looking at my favorite movies to watch over and over. I was like, okay, how low on Rotten Tomatoes can I go? You know?
How low?
Insurrection in a day of you know, movies streaming, we watch stuff on TV or watch movies on TV. It kind of fits, right? I mean, yeah, it is a TNG episode we watch at home, and now we watch that at home. So
yeah,
totally fits.
How about the one I, oh, and the name just left me. Oh, Time Bandits is, by my intentions, like I could sit any time of the day and watch Time Bandits and never feel bad about it. But I don't think there are very many people who are with me on that.
90%
of Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, well then, shit. Yeah.
Once again, okay. So if we look at Rotten Tomato scores, even if we look at the audience scores, I think only the people who are going to watch, only audience people who are going to be reporting on this movie is going to be people more like us. So, I mean, like Return to Oz, if I walked out the door right now and walked down the street, there's very little chance I would even meet one person who's even seen Return to Oz.
It'd be rare.
I think the people that are movie lovers, though, I think that's a much higher percentage.
You have movies in your history,
right,
that you've watched more than once, more than twice, mm-hmm, maybe, that you like, that are considered bad. Surely.
But don't you think it's like a comfort?
So many.
I'm somebody here on the show.
Right.
We should make a distinction between comfort watches and guilty pleasures. And that's when I start to think, well, maybe the difference is you wouldn't want to tell people you're seeing it all the time. And I don't mean somebody with a weird porn fetish or something. I don't mean like that. But I mean, like, you know, let's say your favorite movie is Step Up, you know.
That would be a guilty.
You wouldn't tell anyone that you're into Step Up.
Is that a guilty pleasure or more of an embarrassment?
Well, I don't know. Like, that's my whole point.
Embarrassed to say I watched this.
A little bit.
Yeah, while you're watching it, do you say, oh my God, why am I watching this thing? It's so horrible. That's the embarrassment. If you watch, say, I like this movie, too bad other people don't like it as much as I do. That's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Step Up is at 21% on Rotten Tomatoes, and that's what we're talking about, boys.
Nice.
Yeah.
Give me a movie where most people just hate that damn thing, but you're going to sit and watch it.
Now, that's easy. Sucker Punch for me. Every time Sucker Punch, people go, oh, hate that kitty me. Well, shut up. You don't like music videos? That's fine. Go do something else.
Yeah.
It's a great music video. I love it.
That's a good. There's a good call. 22? Okay. Nice and low.
And how many times do you think you've seen it, Brian?
Oh, God. I own the Blu-ray. Let's see. I can't even count the number of times I've seen it. I usually whenever I put something up, it's usually like we're going to be Prometheus or Sucker Punch. These are all movies I play on my 100-inch screen projection TV, and they're all just so fantastic. Big, glorious, loud spectacles that are just fun to turn on.
Yeah.
And, so I can't even tell how many times I've seen it. Tons of times.
How many times have you seen a giant ship shaped like a wheel run over Charlize Theron? How many times have you seen that?
Right. Twice, I think. I'm not Scott Johnson. Talking to?
All right. Because I like that movie. I like that movie, but I have a lot of the same issues with it. But I guess maybe the thing with Guilty is you just... I don't know. The word guilt is hanging me up.
Yeah, guilt is hanging us up.
Yeah, and I don't know how to get around that.
All right,
let me take it out of the equation. Don't feel guilty. Take it out.
Okay.
Let me give you a couple of examples where the word guilt fits, because I have personally talked to you and felt that. I've felt that somehow. Okay. So
only guilty pleasure I can think of is porn. How is that? Is that you actually literally feel guilty? There you go.
Which is both guilty and pleasure, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of guilt, a little bit of pleasure. Yeah.
I'll throw mine out there that won't surprise anybody. And I'll throw two out there because they both actually happen to star the same actor. Won't surprise anyone for me to say Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
Still love that film. I don't know why. I like the fact that you've got robbers who have come up with I think a genius way of timing their stuff with music, because that's how I would do it. Stupid Girl by Garbage, 3 minutes 28 seconds, that's how much time I need to get down to the end of the block or something,
right?
The one that people probably don't know that I also love is also Bruce Willis's Blind Date. Oh, that's a good one. John Larroquette.
Would you put your Hudson Hawk in there or no?
What do you mean?
In this category, would you say?
I said it right before.
Oh, I totally missed Hudson Hawk. How did I miss here?
yeah.
Sorry.
Hudson Hawk.
Anyway.
Yep.
I feel like you have struck gold, Ibbot. Hudson Hawk is at 31%. And nice. Blind Date is at 24%.
Now we're talking.
I also personally, as you were bringing them up, I thought, I don't want to watch that. That's what right. I thought. I do not want
to
watch that.
Randy's has got to be some Beverly Hills Chihuahua or something crazy.
Yeah, give us what. I don't think we've heard one of Randy's.
Three ninjas strike back.
So I decided to just arbitrarily draw a line at 47% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm going to go down from here. And I'm only looking for movies that I have seen at least 10 times. Like I was trying to really stretch, you know, into what is the thing that I am by myself on, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. And so like, at 46% is Michael Mann's, Miami Vice.
Oh,
I can't get anybody to watch that movie. With
you know
me.
What?
I love it. So
good
much.
One. Good call. I like that movie for the same reasons you do. I like that movie a lot.
And that's low.
Yeah.
Tomatoes, really?
Yeah, 46%.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And then at 45%, I have 50 First Dates, which I'm sad that it's that low because I really would like for everybody to like it.
Sandler
like I do,
film?
You know?
Was it the Sandler movie? Or am I thinking
yes.
something else? Okay.
Yes. Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore and
Cheeky's Forgetting. Yeah.
Yeah, like I think there are a number of Adam Sandler movies that fall into this category.
Oh,
I don't mean like Happy Gilmore and those that are well thought of. I mean like I like Little Nicky.
Pixels.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen Pixels. That's probably as bad as everyone said it was. I don't know.
Well, and so you're on the plus side, right? So if you knew someone who loved Pixels, you would be the one providing them with the guilt.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right.
Right.
You would be the guilt giver. The guilt dealer, as the kids.
Just like diving way down. Just this week, I watched The Island yet again. It's at 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm. Oh, I do like The Island. Yeah,
you know, Michael Bay is so just particular.
Where's Armageddon on the RT score?
That's a good one.
I'm just curious because I love Armageddon.
It's going to be in the 70s.
It might be higher than you think. Yeah. I remember the time critics are pretty hard on it, but maybe it.
Right.
Maybe
38%.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
That's way lower.
That counts.
And I guess that is a guilty pleasure. For I never sure, thought about it. Yeah. But once again, maybe I feel like in our group, everybody I know likes Armageddon. So it's like it's definitely not indicative of what's going on and out in the real world.
Apparently. No,
it's kind of hard to believe. I was surprised at the 38% because there's a Criterion Collection version of this
important.
Movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got so much going for it, but it is probably right in the middle of the pack of guilty pleasures where if you just like went to random people, you know, and said, hey, let's watch Armageddon. They'd be like, do we have to?
Whenever I think of Armageddon, I got to think of Con Air. So, I mean, it's just like, they're cut from the same cloth almost.
They're inextricably linked, basically. Right.
Red Con Air Light is what that's called.
Red. Yeah.
You start with that.
But
one.
No, but you're right, though. They're in the same category. Like all those Bruckheimer era things. I don't think The Rock is going to be low on this review.
Nah,
I think RT is probably really high on that. But but that vibe of late 90s action films, I sometimes feel a little guilty for liking all of them. Like I'll watch.
Yeah.
I can't think of one I don't like, I guess is what I'm saying. Even the bad ones. Like I'm trying to think here. What's a bad Bruckheimer movie?
Can you name one that you've watched, you know, 10 times or more? Like, have you watched Twister a bunch?
I think it was with you guys. It's been a bit, but prior to that, I was watching Twister a lot. And, you know, I always think of Speed as infinitely rewatchable, but again, it's not guilty. It's a, everybody likes Speed. Nobody doesn't like Speed. Mm-hmm. I can't.
You ever like Speed?
Yeah. You ever heard of Speed? but yeah, like that era of, I don't know what even to call that. Did we ever have a name for that kind of action that we were getting out of Bruckheimer and Bay? And
So both Twister and The Rock are at 63% and kind of out of the conversation. But let me just blow your mind with the current Rotten Tomatoes score for Speed.
Blow it.
Like, you would just, I you're going to have to go look this up because you're not going to believe me when I say this.
Okay.
Speed on RT is at 95%.
Oh, wow.
That's people higher than I would have expected, yes.
Yeah, it's higher than I thought, but I'm still not totally shocked. I mean, it feels like an 80, 85.
I mean, it's a great movie, right?
Even that feels too high for me.
Really?
Yeah. I'd say I would have predicted 68%.
But once again, like, I think...
Low 70s, high 60s kind of
thing. I don't think you have to be a movie lover to have seen Speed. You can just be a casual movie lover in like Speed.
Just have tickets on a Friday night to see Speed. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel like If that felt like a, hey, everybody come see this movie about the bus that can't slow down, and everybody got in on it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I sort of agree with that. Another one I always think of is Jumper. Do you guys remember Jumper? So,
I do remember Jumper. That's that weird time jumper thing, right? Where you can
jump. Well, it was more like distance jumping, but it was Hayden Christensen, Samuel L. Jackson's in it as well, smaller role, but Jamie Bell's in it also. Anyway, Hayden Christensen's character, don't remember his name, could jump anywhere he wanted to anytime. Oh, Michael Rooker's in it. Man, this has got a lot of Disney MCU people in it. But anyway, he could jump to like the top of a pyramid in Giza and then immediately be in a Walmart in New York if he wanted to. And it felt like a early example of what superhero movies are going to attempt to do. And I think this was even pre-Iron Man and even Dark Knight. But it was cool. It was Doug Liman who made some or all of those Bourne Identity movies. I can't remember how many he did. Bourne Identity, I think the first one, that was him. Anyway, it's a movie that nobody thought was good. I'm guessing the rating sub 50, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's lower than that.
Is it lower than that? Where are we at on that one, on Jumper?
15%.
Oh, my Lord. See, and that's a movie
and
I
by
enjoy.
The way, that's going to end up being the second lowest movie that we talk about today, because 50, it's hard to get that low. Like, it, you know?
So what does it work for it?
What does it say about me or anyone who says, ooh, I could watch Jumper? Because that feels like I am guilty. I feel guilty saying that now, hearing that score. That's horrible.
Well, if you heard the score, now you feel guilty.
Yeah. That's so low. Like, I thought you would tell me, oh, it's like 48. No.
I think sometimes it's time and place. I feel like a part of this, not all of it, but a part of this is that everyone was poised to hate Hayden Christensen at that time. Mm-hmm. And that drags it down.
Yeah, what was up with that?
Yeah,
I remember everybody hating him.
I
was
a lot
like,
of shit. I don't know why.
Why do you hate him so much for?
Because he was out of Star Wars now by, what, a few years? 2005 was the last prequel. And I think I don't know. I have lots of issues with the prequels, but none of them were that Hayden Christensen wasn't the problem. He was fine.
He wasn't he wasn't great, but he wasn't the problem with those movies. And I think he redeemed himself with the Obi-Wan stuff he did.
Oh, right. That was recently. Great. Yeah, that was great.
Then we get these videos of Hayden Christensen at San Diego Comic-Con, and he's getting a standing cheering ovation, and he's crying because he's finally, you know,
he found
finally
his people.
Approved of,
Well, we're hard on stuff like that. Like lately, the dude that played, or was at least the body actor for Jar Jar Binks, is finally getting his due with his cameo in, was it Mandalorian this year? I think.
Oh, yes.
He was a Jedi or something. Anyway, Ahmed Best, I guess is his name. Anyway.
Ahmed Best. Yeah, there we go. I was trying to remember his name. Well done.
You see, I forget my aunt's name today, and suddenly I know Ahmed Best jumps out of my brain. I don't know how that works, but anyway, to see that is really heartening, but at the same time, it makes me mad. I'm like, why do we do this in the first place? Like, Ahmed Best was not your problem. Your problem was how that character was written. Your problem is with George Lucas and a million other decisions. And even if that is a problem, it's a movie, freaking get over yourself. So part of me thinks we should never feel guilty about any of it. It's like, sure. Like shit you like.
Yeah, and that's how we are on FilmSack, though. I mean, we're all about who cares? Watch it.
Yeah.
Watch what you want.
Yeah. We like to, we'll be critical where I think critical is required for the show, but it's never like, I hope that guy in underworld who played Craven died in a heart and have a heart attack. Like, I don't want that for him. I want him to move on and do whatever he does best. And it's unfortunate and he was in a movie that didn't best use him. Actually, yeah. So
I actually feel like one of the things we're doing on FilmSack is we're looking for the reasons to like something. We're mm-hmm. taking something that maybe we've heard is bad, right? Like going into Underworld, you could see clearly that it was critically panned. And then let's find the things that we like. You know, it's got great action. It's the cinematography is very, you know, intense and, mm-hmm. and interesting.
The effects are good and all that stuff. Yeah.
We do that. And I've got a couple of FilmSack films that over the years, I've put all my favorite movies onto FilmSack. And like some of them, I find myself trying to convince the rest of you, right? Mm-hmm. that you should like this. And I kind of I often fail. Like, The Saint comes up. I bring it up mm-hmm. regularly because I watch it all the damn time. And I just can't. I can't really make a case.
How'd that one do, by the way? Just in the
30%. 30%.
Okay, so that one. That is one I would. I am on the side of that movie's not very good, and I know you are very fond of it. I think this fits. This is your definition, mm-hmm. right
another
here.
Another one. I quietly put in our list long ago was The Village, M. Night Shyamalan's movie, and I love the movie. I've seen it many, many times. It's at 42% on Rotten Tomatoes. That actually, I'm okay with that. I don't feel like that's too low, but I can't convince anybody to like that movie. It's just, it's for me and nobody else, I guess.
For me included, I hate that movie. But part of the reason I don't, I'm a little surprised it's not lower. So this is, I guess this is another example or an illustration of just how different everybody's tastes are, you know? Because I like M. Night Shyamalan movies, and there's probably somebody out there who thinks The Happening is awesome. I don't know who that person is, but thinks Wahlberg. But
somebody
does.
Yeah, somebody has to.
Somebody's like, man, I wish Wahlberg would make a sequel. Let's get that going again. But that someone ain't us, you know. And it's okay.
Well, let me give you the lowest rated movie that I could think of that I have watched many, many times, and that I love, and that no one will go with me into. And that is Kevin Costner's The Postman.
Oh, I'm with you, though. I love that movie.
Yeah.
And I think the theme for me, and I'm curious about the rest of you, especially Brian Ibbett, because what you brought up, like a couple of movies that really, really pushed me. the theme for me, Postman is at 8% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my God. Wow.
Never seen it.
Wow.
And I'm waiting because I know eventually we're going to watch on FilmSack. So I haven't seen it either.
We just need 4 hours. Myself. We need 4 hours to watch it and we're good.
The theme for me on why these are movies that I've watched repeatedly and why I feel the way I do about them is that they are emotional and they all have a touch, certain kind of romance. Even a weird movie like The Replacements, you know, the Gene Hackman, Keanu Reeves football movie.
Yeah.
A movie like that. There's a romance in there, like a thing where there's a heroic, you know, there's a heroic character and they're trying to save something for somebody. And sometimes like they're kind of falling in love, like the Saint, you know, like there's a love story, but not really. It's kind of there. Sure. And then you get there in the end and like, there's just these emotional buttons that a movie can push for me. And I end up watching The Postman. I've probably watched it 35 times.
Yeah.
And wow. There's a moment where you go up a long, long river to the top of a dam and there you are. And you meet a famous rock singer, and it like the music and the shot and everything. I'm just like, good.
Are you talking about the scene where you meet Tom Petty and he plays himself?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. A lot of people have that Mandela effect that they think that the Waterworld has Tom Petty in it, and they've got it wrong. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's the wrong movie. But
so,
yeah.
So Ibbett, do you have that? Do you have a thing like? Can you describe the theme that they all have in common that makes them your guilty pleasure?
You know, I was thinking about this. I don't have any guilty pleasure movies that I can think of that are dramas. They're almost, except for maybe an action film or two, because I think Con Air is an intentionally a comedy film. But, But for the most part, it's all comedies, like The Man Who Knew Too Little, Bill Murray, Hudson Hawk, Blind Date. For whatever reason, if I feel like a drama, if I don't like, or if I feel like I shouldn't know, what's the word? What's the way to phrase this? If I like it, it's probably a good movie because it's a drama, as opposed to a comedy that is trying to make jokes and is trying to put the characters in funny situations and failing. Drama is just going to be drama. Did it make me feel something? Yeah, then it's a good movie.
Yeah, interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think I kind of do that too. I think I don't think of it that way unless I'm trying to think of it. Actually, you're making a really good point here. If it's not genre, if it's not like a genre film dealing with science fiction or something else, science or a fantasy or something, then it's just straight drama. I don't know if I have any comfort drama.
Yeah, I mean, do I laugh at Hudson Hawk? No, not at all. I don't think I may crack a smile, but there's nothing in that movie that actually makes me laugh intentionally.
Yeah,
You know, the Sandra Bernhardt ball, that stuff, you know, the dog going out the window. But so it's much easier for a comedy to fail at being a comedy than a drama to fail at being a drama.
Right.
Are you surprised to learn that The Man Who Knew Too Little is at 37% on RT?
No, I'm not surprised at all, because I think that's probably regarded as one of Bill Murray's worst films, and I don't know why. That one, okay, you know what? That one I'll laugh at, and I think it's only because of Bill Murray. It's that Bill Murray could read the directions for a IKEA lamp, and I'd still find it tremendously funny.
Yeah.
Not the script, not the stuff they give him to do, the whole thing that he thinks he's basically thinking he's doing some sort of Michael Douglas The Game thing through the whole film.
Yeah, he does.
And it's just his delivery of his lines that is the funniest thing in that movie.
Yeah, kind
of. My example of that, your Bill Murray there, my example of that is Kelsey Grammer in Down Periscope. Mm-hmm. I've seen it so many times.
I could
watch any
example.
Scene.
Great example. Yeah.
It's at 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. Wow.
I like that movie.
I feel like there shouldn't be anyone who would want to sit and watch Down Periscope with me. They should all objectively say, no, that's a bad time.
Yeah.
You just go on by yourself.
What was the Steve Martin one that was similar? It was based on
two brains?
No, it was the similar thing where it was based on
yes, Bilko. Wasn't it Sergeant Bilko?
Sergeant Bilko. Yeah. Same deal for me. Sergeant Bilko is not a good movie. I know it isn't, but I don't care. Yeah. I will watch Sergeant Bilko right now.
I don't think I've ever seen it, or Down Periscope for that matter.
You've never seen Down Periscope. You should see it. Those are a good time.
You've never seen that? I'm surprised you haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Sounds like your kind of thing. Right?
I have also not seen Sergeant Bilko. It is at 30%, and I want to watch it right now.
You should. It's great. It's one of Phil Hartman's last films.
Wow.
He's in it. Plays an uptight dude in the army. And I think it's based on the Got 50 Bucks, that guy's old show, right?
Oh, Borgnine.
Borgnine, yeah. So I think that's what it's based on.
It's definitely based on an old TV show. Is that the one that was Borgnine in Bilko?
I think so. And that's,
I thought he was McHale's Navy.
Oh, you know what? I might actually be confusing the two, and it's got nothing to do with it. Or maybe McHale's Navy remake is also a dumb thing that I like.
there's a McHale's Navy remake?
I think so. Now I'm confused. Maybe I've mixed all these together, because Down Periscope and that, they all fit in the same stupid...
Yes, Brian. McHale's Navy is a 1964 Ernest Borgnine movie.
Yeah.
And then the remake is Tom Arnold and Tim Curry in 1997.
That's the one I'm thinking of. I also like that stupid thing, and it's got to be horribly reviewed. There's no way that's good.
I want you to know you've beaten me. You have come in under the postman, finally. McHale's Navy. McHale's Navy is at 3%.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Wow. So okay, there's the lesson in this. The lesson is... I like nautical freaking dumb comedies about boats. Yeah. Why?
What about Battleship?
Oh my gosh. See, and I really liked Battleship, and that's also, I know that's reviewed bad. It's got to be under 20.
I'm going to guess 35%.
I'll give 20.
I'm giving it 38.
I'll give it 20. Let's give it 20. Where are we at, Randy? With
this is the Taylor Kitsch, Alexander Skarsgård movie that we sacked.
That we just watched a couple months or a few months ago.
Like over a year ago, I think.
Has it really?
It's been a bit of time. Yeah,
it's been a while. Anyway, it is at 33%.
Oh, okay. A little higher than I thought.
Good job.
That movie's all right.
Two movies are, I suppose.
I got some Rihanna problems in it, but you know, whatever.
Silvers, by the way, was Sergeant Bilko, the original TV show.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Oh.
I've got them all mixed up. They're all one thing. Everything about those We're in the Navy comedies, they're all the same thing to me.
Yeah.
I don't have any way to differentiate them at all.
So I just want to ask again to Brian Dunaway, because you kind of ruled yourself out on principle. And I think it's a perfectly valid principle to stand on. But I'm just curious, have you really not thought of any movies that you're like, I'm not going to show my significant other this. I'm just going to watch it by myself.
Star Trek, The Next Penetration.
Well,
No.
I know, no porn counts.
You know what I mean?
I would be judged based on liking a movie, kind of that kind of a guilt. Like, well,
in some cases, like with my significant other, there's just movies where I love them and I will sit and watch them, but I would never show them to her because she would hate the violence or the.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I know what she doesn't like. And so there's no sense in showing them to her. I don't feel guilty. I'm like, I like these movies. And it's like, it's okay that you don't like these movies. But all the Friday the 13th movies, I've never wanted to show her any of them because I know she hates gore. She hates gore. So I'm like, okay, I don't ever want to show her those. But then me and Andrew, he wanted to watch the Friday the 13th one, the first one. I said, okay, but this is totally different. It's not like all the rest of them. The first one, Jason's not even really in this. Not like you think. He's like a little kid they'll show him for a minute.
Yeah.
But he's not the bad guy in this one. There's no Jason. There's no hockey mask, no nothing. And she actually came in near the end and she's like, oh, wow, I didn't know it was anything like this. And I said, yeah, it's got Kevin Bacon in it and stuff. And she said, oh, I wouldn't mind going back and watching that. And I was shocked, but I certainly didn't feel guilty for watching it. I'll watch it wherever I want.
Yeah, you do what you want. You do what you want. Yeah.
Right. But there's all kinds of stuff I don't watch in mixed company. But I think that's maybe a different, you know, like, I don't think they'll like this. No sense in showing.
I mean, I have a thing for horror.
They'll just shit on it.
I have a thing for horror movies, like new and old horror movies. I think Dunaway's like this too. And Kim has no interest in watching most of the horror I'll watch.
Yeah. Same with Tina. I'm not going to get her to watch Megan or.
Audra actually liked Megan.
Any of those.
Megan was awesome. Yeah. Megan was great. Awesome.
I don't know. There's a lot of gore in Megan though.
Megan, I think, has the what about Bob problem, which is.
Okay. Okay.
People don't know that Megan is secretly a shitty creation.
Right. That's hilarious. Everybody, I love it.
Maybe not quite the one about Bob situation, but it's
That's a fair point. I don't know what it takes to get, like, you know, Kim is super into. We've talked about this all the time. She's super into the holiday movies on Hallmark Channel and all that stuff, and they are objectively bad and terrible, and also samey and just not great. Once in a while, one may shine a little bit, but none of them are great. Right. And she knows this. She knows.
She knows this.
She's not like going, Scott, these are great. You don't understand. These are some of the best television shows ever made, or movies or whatever. And I'm just like, you know, I would obviously, well, we'd have to have a divorce if she felt that way. But for real, like, she loves them in a guilty pleasure way.
Right.
It gives her a kind of like, oh, it's the holidays and all this holiday shit and it's not good, but I don't care. And you know, how many times can you watch Elf over and over? It's a great movie. Well, go watch this thing about a guy who owns a wood cutting shop in a small town, and a lady from New York came for a visit, but now she falls in love. It's all the same. And she knows it. She knows this. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. You know, I know when I sit down with some of these movies we talked about, when I watch Jumper, I know I'm getting into something that is just, you know, by definition a bad film,
right?
But I don't care.
And maybe Porky's is a true guilty pleasure, because whenever I watch it, I'm like, I don't want to buy it. I'm watching this is, you know, this is the only reason why it's important to me, is because it was one of those first movies that adult kind of movies I saw when I was a kid. So it holds a coming of age kind of a place for me. It was something that I would be, you know, is in the mature adult, I'm like, well, that's objectively in poor taste.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good example of a subset of guilty pleasure movies.
But like, I bet the score is good on poor taste.
The score is 33%.
Wow. Okay. All right. So see.
Oh, there we go.
And I think the reason for the low score is the same as your reason for not wanting to sit and watch it with your family. Right. Because a lot of viewers don't think titillation makes a good movie. You know?
Right. But it represents titillation. So much about Porky's or things like it from that era. They represent our coming of age and this rebellion kind of. And so it does have value on that level. But I can't imagine anyone ever going, oh, Porky's, that's a cinematic masterpiece.
Right. They changed everything. And they kind of did. They allowed a lot of that kind of film to come to fruition. Right.
So, yeah. I mean, don't you feel so like that hard R comedy, 80s hard R comedies? I don't even know that exists without that success.
It's a really interesting space because you're able to have success with those kind of things. And so people who are trying to break into the business might be to break in that way. Same with horror films. Horror films are always pushing the boundaries, but they're really low budget. And it allows artists who might not have been able to get in through the main way, like Sam Raimi. I mean, come on. I mean, the Sam Raimi show and stuff, it's like, no, we don't want to see this. But then he brings out The Evil Dead, and you're like, okay, oh, and this new little, you know, camera tricks you're doing and stuff. It's an opportunity to, for these struggling young.
One of the Coen brothers worked on porn sets to get going. Like, he had to start somewhere. So, yeah, in some ways, you look at things like Evil Dead, and you just... You're never going, oh, wow, the ultimate in cinema. But what you are saying is, oh, wow, look what these kids did with very little money and very little time. And it holds up in a weird way, and it's campy in all these other great ways. And he's this huge director, does like major motion pictures now. And I think there's nothing wrong with celebrating this stuff, especially when it's like the beginning of something.
Right.
And for them, it's like the beginning of great careers and a new kind of horror movie and all that.
And you might know someone who loves Evil Dead, and there's not a good reason for that. You know, they just love it and watch it over. I think that's a cornerstone of a guilty pleasure, right? Like, there doesn't need to be anything. You know, like I was calling for you to like examine your guilty pleasures and come up with a theme, but the theme could be it's an accident. It's a pure accident that I watch. And my best example of that ever, I just want to leave you with this. I really, really dislike the movie Revenge of the Nerds. I've only seen it one time with you guys on Film Sack. There's a lot of reasons to dislike
mean.
That movie.
It's mean. Right. Yeah.
If it was a guilty pleasure for me, I would have some real guilt over it, but it's not. You know what is what is a guilty pleasure for me? Revenge of the Nerds 2, Nerds in Paradise, which is at 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. Right. I've seen that movie a dozen times. Hmm. I can't explain it. It's a pure accident that as a movie I've seen so many times.
Well, I feel like it switched emphasis. The emphasis in the first one was mean. Like I think Dunaway said it really well. And the emphasis in two was, hey, these lovable nerds are up to some hijinks and no one's getting really hurt here.
It's Police Academy with nerds, basically.
There you go. Yeah, because in a lot of ways, Police Academy 1 is kind of mean-spirited. It's kind of rude and bigoted and not nice. Police Academy 2 and forward, they may not be good movies, but it's just a good old time with these characters we like.
Exactly. What is Hightower up to today?
Yeah. I don't know. There's something to that.
And I bet nothing after Police Academy 1 is higher than 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know this weird fact about Rotten Tomatoes that has to do with Police Academy, and it's always stuck with me. It's the strangest thing. None of them are above 57%. The first one's at 57%. The rest of them are below that.
Oh, wow.
But this is the weirdest thing. Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach. Police Academy 6, City Under Siege. All three movies are at 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, my God.
Is it to score them?
That's got to be a clerical error as opposed to... just nobody likes them.
That
somebody out there has to like them.
It is every review that is posted on Rotten Tomatoes is a negative review.
They're bad movies, but I kind of like them, especially the. Do you say there's a
the joke that whatever the number and the title is what its score is on Rotten Tomatoes?
That'd be about right. But what? But like those movies. What was I going to say about it? They don't. I've seen them all. I've seen all of those, and I remember kind of having a decent time with it. Like, oh, here's a VHS rental of four, and Michael Winslow still making those wacky sounds, and Murtaugh. What's his name? The two football players, Biscuit and Jim, whatever they are.
Did you say Biscuit and Jim?
Yeah,
Biscuit
and Jim. they were fun to watch, and
your names for stuff. Yeah.
And the guy
differently though, if instead of renting it, if you had gone to the theater and paid money, good money to see it in the theater,
that's a fair
point.
Feel
differently about it.
I don't know about it.
I would absolutely
know what
that.
You were getting into when you rented and brought it home.
100%.
You may not have.
Yeah, that was never a day one theater guy for me, and I think those were all theater too, right? Weren't they?
At least the first three were, four, but I don't know if they just started going straight to video.
Well, it surprises me that Gutenberg got to do anything else after that.
Yeah.
And I like Steve Gutenberg, but the fact that he got to do Cocoon and got to do Three Men and a Baby and all that, it feels almost like a miracle because, boy, you want to get typecast in a shitty series.
Yeah.
Make it Police Academy.
There's another one. Yeah. What is it? High
Sharon
Spirits?
Stone escaped.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot she was even in there.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Our brief look at all things guilty pleasures. I'm really curious what listeners will say. So send us your emails, filmsack@gmail.com, or you can send us texts or voicemails, 801-471-0462, and lay into this topic. What do you think they're supposed to be? What are yours? Where are we wrong?
Let's see some discussion on the Patreon post. Yeah. I'm really, really interested in what people identify as their, like, number one guilty pleasure movie.
Yeah. We have some Porky's stands out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
And it's Porky's is the greatest film ever made. It's a safe space. Don't feel afraid to tell us what your hot garbage movie is that you like.
And right.
We will love you and accept you regardless.
Even if it is Ski School. Whatever.
Oh my gosh, Ski School.
Up the creek.
Yeah.
Those two work for me, though. You do a better job in the final waning moments of this episode. And describing what a guilty pleasure is for me than anyone has so far.
Hard bodies, yeah.
Nicely done. God. That'll do it for us. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with our film coverage of the mighty movie. There it is, Thunderball. We're watching Thunderball. So come back for Thunderball. Get your James Bond on again. We're going through them all eventually. So, the ones we haven't seen. And we would like to have you here for that. In the meantime, filmsack.com. That'll do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Not guilty.
We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.